From the Boomer and the Babe studio at the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's time for Success or Failure with Tom and Terry. Success or Failure is the show that gives you methods and principles to guide you to your best business and your best self. Now here are Tom Legering and Terry Munther.
And Arizona Boomer Radio brings you Success or Failure, today broadcasting from Sun City Country Club, the home of Tom Legering, owner, entrepreneur, and magical mystery man that travels around on a motorcycle and in the canyons. So here now is the host for your show, Tom Legering, and his guest.
Good morning. This is really a great day, and I'm very fortunate on one hand. I'm fortunate to have Terry Summers, our guest, and I'm unfortunate to not have Terry Munther, Dr. Terry Munther, who is traveling. He's coming back to Arizona from his Washington home, and he's on the road, so he won't be joining us today. And I think today what we're going to do is really chat with Terry, which is a continuing conversation that we've had in the past, where Terry is one of my heroes because she has gotten out of a very abusive relationship. And even though it's not over, she has to constantly be on guard so that it doesn't ever slip backwards. And I'd like to introduce Terry to our audience today. Terry?
Hello, Tom. How are you?
Very good. What actually are you doing today? I mean, we talked last time about the fact that you were in an abusive relationship, and then we were just chatting about the first time you stood up for yourself and you were in court, and the judge was asking you, well, why are you put up with this?
Why are you standing up for yourself now? You know, because we were saying some pretty serious things. I mean, you know, he was threatening to kill my brother, threatening to just do a lot of terrible things, and he was mean enough to do it and caused a lot of concern. I mean, you don't know who's bluffing and who's not when people say serious things like that. And the judge just said to us, so why are you doing it now? Why do you, you know? And I said, because it's do or die. I have nothing. If he's just going to continue to intimidate us and threaten us, myself and my family, my brothers and sisters, he would not only threaten me with the four children that I had, we had together, but he would threaten my brothers and sisters. He told my brother he'd burn his house to the ground and he'd beat the F out of him if he got involved in the court hearing. You know, I mean, that's pretty serious. I mean, he threatened him. And so the judge was like, well, why are you guys, you know, and I said, well, he's threatening us and he's making us afraid. And she said, well, where'd you get the guts to stand up now? I said, because it's do or die. We either stick up for ourselves or we're just going to go through this forever. He's going to continue to forever do this to us. I have to stick up for myself. I really don't have a choice.
And, because he might have carried out his threats.
He had done a number of things. He had come very close to killing me. He'd hurt me a lot, and he did a lot. He, at one point, and it's confessed in court, and another person testified in court that at one point he was going to kill everybody in our house. I was at my mother's house, and he was going to kill everybody there. You know, and whatever snapped or kept him from doing that, I don't know, but he was just a very violent man. He'd had a lot of hurt in his life. But, you know, I can sing that same song. I've had, you know, tough childhood or whatever, but that's still no excuse for someone to be violent, no matter what their hardship is. We've all had hardship. It's not an excuse to threaten other people's peace or to threaten to injure them, you know, in that way. And especially, and here I am a mom, and as a mother or anybody going through domestic violence, you really have to assess the situation you're in. And you have to realize your children are watching everything that you do. And I began to really learn a lot about being a victim. When your children look at you as a victim, they can either pick up that pattern and they will either, it's a weird chemistry that goes on, but once you begin to see it and understand it, so the education of this was critical. For me to begin to learn that the abuser the children cannot stand up to the abusive parent. They just can't stand up to him. If the mother is already afraid of, or in my case, let me say, because men sometimes are also abused by a woman, it can be man or woman.
Yeah.
But in my case, I was the mom, he was the dad. So the dad, my kids could not stand up to their abusive father. They could not, and especially if they see the mother, the other adult they should be looking up to, afraid and stepping back and intimidated, they look at me as a victim, someone that they could not trust my counsel. They, you know, and that's a terrible thing. Children need to trust the voice of their mother.
Right.
And I began to see that, and I was the one that would teach them what was right. Obey the law, be a loving, kind person, be a good citizen, all those good things. And my husband would actually teach them, like, it's okay to break the law. He would mock authority. I mean, everything you don't want your children to learn. A very surprising element to me. And when I would say, that's not right, or whatever, I mean, I could expect to get pounded on for stuff like that. But I had three sons, you know, and I'm trying to teach my children right, but that became, it was a constant battle. And it was, but in that battle, I'm saying do one thing, the dad is saying doing another. Who are those children going to believe when they see one is the strong one and one is the weak one? One's ducking and running away or crying or defeated. And I thought, you know, for my children's sake, even if I couldn't have done it for myself at times, for my children's sake, I had to do something, and I couldn't for the life of me understand why would someone who would marry you, say they love you, pound on you and crush you in every way possible, crush your spirit, crush your heart, crush you, just constantly crush you. I mean, somebody could watch you cry and punch you because they, you know, you look pitiful to them. Strange. It's an ugly thing what an abusive person can do, and they're injured as well. It still doesn't make it okay.
Yeah.
So I, you know, they may, no, it doesn't. They may need counseling and they may need help, you know, and I feel, I know that man's been through sorrow and I know he's been hurt and injured in his own heart, but it still doesn't make it okay to go and do what you did to a wife and his children.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the abuse that he also began to do to his children was some strange things. And once people recognize those cycles and they see it, there's so much written on this that I would encourage anybody going through domestic violence, read up on it. The cycle, just like in a course of law, if you're doing drugs, they will write you, you know, you're going to go and they're going to give you a course of action to go take classes or whatever, because they know the signs of an early drug addict, what he will become, and they know what some of the deterrents to help him stop doing that are. So they'll put a course of action in place. Even though he's not a full-fledged addict yet, they're going to go and make him take drug classes. Or drivers that don't drive well, they're going to write them a ticket and say, you need to go take a defensive driving class. Well, with domestic violence, if you have someone being verbally abusive to you, ordering you around, not caring about how you feel, running over you as a person, dominating you as a human being, those are early warning signs. But read the writing on the wall. And if you're beginning to be hit, they may say that they're sorry. And there's a cycle that has been researched out, like they've researched drug addicts, they've researched drivers, that they know that's a continuing thing. In domestic violence, you see those early warning signs, we know for certain what it begins to escalate to. We know those signs, and it's researched and it's written. And when you read up on that, you will begin to see if you're really in that cycle. That first, you know, it seems like the most perfect person. You're with a wonderful, loving, caring person. They don't show you all of their true colors. And then there's a cycle that began, you know, so if you were to take and draw a circle and start at midnight and 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and you were to make each one of those points a point of that cycle. At midnight, you know, at 12 o'clock hour, at noon, let's say, it's everything's beautiful. It's great, it's good, it's all good. You think it's a great relationship. But then the tension begins to build up, and that's kind of stage one. Tension, a lot of tension, where you become uneasy, where you start to, I mean, anything that you say or do is becoming highly criticized, where you're being threatened, intimidated, you know, and it's working, it's like pressure building, some uncomfortableness that's not normal. Normally, people have a disagreement, they can discuss it, hash it out. In a domestic violence relationship, it's not that way. It's going to be the way that the abuser says, and that's final. And that tension of you feel like you can't speak, you know, your opinion's not going to count.
It takes away your voice.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And it's they start to isolate you. When they stop wanting you to be around your friends or taking away anything that you like or love, something simple like a craft or anything. I mean, I loved plants and flowers, and he had the weirdest thing about it. He would just go pluck them up. Just pluck them up and lay them there to die. Just because I liked it, I mean, it's just a strange thing. Or jewelry or a purse or anything that he would just break them. And accuse me of doing things that, I mean, I was a good wife. But he would accuse me if I'd go to the grocery store and, you know, you brush your hair, you look presentable before you go to the grocery store. Who are you going to see? I'm going to buy groceries. But it became this high tension moment if I was going anywhere. I mean, logic, normal life. So when that tension is building up, that's called the walking on eggshells stage. You know, and that, so you can pay attention to where you're at. If you're in a dating situation and it's becoming like that, red flag, read up on it, get out of it. It shouldn't be like that. And then it becomes worse. Then it becomes pressure building up, like pressure in a pressure cooker. It builds up, and then they have that time of explosion, whether it's extremely verbal or it becomes very physical, and they begin to beat you up, and there's all different kinds of levels of that. But the thing is that once that element is there, without something seriously getting interjected, like counseling or something that's absolutely, if the abuser will admit that they're being abusive and go and get help, you may have something to work with there. You know, you've got, but if not, don't think that will change itself.
Yeah.
And that pressure's going to build up, and then there's those explosions, and then you're getting beat up, and then, so that's at the 6 o'clock, and then the 9 o'clock stage of, you know, so I'm just trying to make,
you're
just
right.
Point out that cycle, then they're so extremely sorry. They are so sorry. You're just almost heartbroken for them. They are so regretful, and I'm so sorry, and I can't believe I would hurt you, and I'm so sorry. I'll never do that again, and it just goes on like that. And
right.
Then they kind of, you see that little perfect little window again. It's nice and shiny for a little while again. But that cycle just continues to repeat and repeat and repeat. It doesn't go away. It just keeps going on and on and on. And actually, it becomes more intense as time goes on. So have good wisdom to recognize it in an early stage. Read about it. You'll see that cycle. That's one of the key things that changed stuff for me. I read a book. I couldn't figure out why. It just doesn't make sense that somebody that you're married to and you're supposed to be raising kids with would do that to a human being. My mind can't comprehend it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't. And he would say he was sorry, and I would believe, and I would forgive,
yeah.
But it didn't make it ever stop. Now, I went through years and years and years and 4 kids.
How long did it take from the time that you first started dating to you got married?
Well, we were married in 1980, and it was, and I was young. I was 17 when I was married. I had no clue that he would be like that, that he
mm-hmm.
would become the abusive person that he was.
Right. But then you, how long did you date before you got married?
We were, actually, I was on my own.
Okay.
But I had been on my own for a year when I met my husband, which is kind of a tough story. So, I mean,
yeah.
I have come from the school of hard knocks, but
okay.
I believe anybody can overcome anything. If you really want to, 1, education, 2, be around good people, get good advice. I'm a praying person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm 100% a Christian unapologetically to anyone because
mm-hmm.
I believe that faith, that determination, there's always hope there. Faith there, and I believe I really prayed my way through it. You know, God, what do I do now?
Right.
I cried for many, many years. Don't
right.
think you'll suffer. You make bad choices, and you'll suffer through them.
But then you were dated for a little while. Then you got married.
Yes.
And then how long were you married? You had 4 children, and then how long was it before you actually decided to stand up for yourself?
And it was, well, a lot of the abuse started like when I was pregnant with our first kid and even a little before then, you know. But having been on my own at 17 when I married, you know, once I was married, I couldn't run home to mom.
Right.
You know, if I was in trouble. So I was really, I had to just stick it out.
Yeah, those were your
but
choices.
That was, well, so really all I had.
Yeah.
I didn't have parents. I couldn't have gone. It changed later in the years with my parents, but at that point, I really didn't have any place else to go, and so
okay.
I was really stuck.
Yeah, but something got you out of it. I mean, right. and how I just
as my kids got older, and the cycle just kept going
so
on.
So was that like 10 years or?
Yeah, I would probably say. Let me see. When it did start to change, I would say I think my oldest kid was around 10, 11, and I started to really study it. Let's see, my two youngest was, oh, it's so hard, you know, I've noticed something. I had somebody ask me one time for dates about, you know, like when did you get the divorce, when did you go through these things, and I drew a complete mental block over that.
You
it's funny.
It no, you blocked it out.
Right? It was like that, I'm erasing that bad scene right there, I just don't want to remember. And it was amazing to me how hard it was. I thought I actually had to go look at paperwork because I just, you know, and it's funny. You got to recognize you will have mental blocks. It will, it can injure you, but you can come through anything.
Yeah.
But probably after about 10 years.
Okay. And then to actually stand up for yourself, what was the, you did some reading and you start seeing this cycle.
I would say that I remember this real turning point, and it was going to the library and trying to read up on it. And I found a book called The Spider and the Fly. I think somebody referred it to me because I began to learn to use, you can get an order of protection and that, but when I did, the threats that I began, it just was escalating and becoming so much tougher. And I'd go and try to get an order of protection and it just got so messy and so ugly. And people, sometimes I would talk to certain women or people or court officials or police officers, and every now and then a police officer would just take the time to care and give me good advice.
Okay.
And somebody somewhere told me about this book called The Spider and the Fly. Incredible book. I wish I had the name of the author to give, but it was at the library.
Mm-hmm.
But go read up on it. But one thing in that book is it gave the steps of domestic violence and it told stories. And I could have cried because it was like that person was inside my house and was telling my story. That's why
watching
I'm telling
you.
It's what it felt like. And I would tell people and nobody would believe it.
Mm-hmm.
When I would go to court and have to try to defend myself, my husband would come across as so charming that they would not believe me.
Right.
And I seemed the emotional out of control one. But I was desperate and scared to death. And don't think the courts will not. That takes all the guts you can muster at times.
Mm-hmm.
Because the police have not believed me and shook their head at me and walked away after I was trying to get help. And that just left me in the hands of an abuser that was then mocking me and said, now who are you going to call? Now what are you going to do? And I'm like, oh, my goodness. So I've seen the police being, their lack of education of domestic violence at times hurt me as much as he did.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they left me defenseless. And that's the only agency I had to call to help me. But getting educated about domestic violence, really seeing that I was in a cycle, it was not going to change, that was an abusive person, and I thought, that is so precise, that is exactly what's going on here. And then, to keep reading, the steps you need to take about becoming stronger, not being a victim, how to get out of that. It's okay to stick up for yourself. And the biggest, most compelling things were that if I don't strengthen up, my children are going to begin to see me as a victim. My daughter could begin to pattern her behavior after mine.
Yeah.
And I could be setting
okay.
her up for a life of abuse.
Yeah.
Now I began to take it like that's my responsibility. I cannot knowingly teach my daughter to learn this pattern of abuse.
Yeah.
I don't want my sons to become an abuser either because they've learned this pattern. I must do something to change that. That was the heartbreaker for me, was my kids. Not only did they witness that, my husband was very slick, though, too, that he knew to step around behind a door and punch me in the head. He knew to, if he's going to choke me out, don't do it in front of my oldest son, because, you know, the other ones might kind of run away, but my oldest son was like, don't touch my mother. He couldn't take it. He was very passionate and very caring, and he my husband knew not to do something like that in front of my oldest son. Because he just couldn't, he would not take it. But they're cowards. One of the biggest things to learn about an abuser, because to me he seemed so intimidating, I could have never thought of him as a coward.
Right.
But they are truly cowards.
Absolutely.
Any man that will beat on women and children, and it makes them feel tough, and of course they need something. They are needing something. But it's not my job to take care of that.
Yeah.
He's the man.
Right.
I was going to take care of me, and I needed to take care of my kids. I couldn't fix him. Whatever that's on him. He's got the same God I do.
Right.
He can go get help just like I can. He's got family. He's got people. If he wanted to do right, he would find a way to do right.
Right.
You know, and that's that.
Yeah. I mean, you can't go back and try to fix them. You got to fix you first.
That's exactly right.
That's really what I try to teach when I go to Eve's place and turn a leaf and try to talk to people. That a lot of times when you go to a shelter, the shelters say, it's not your fault that you're a victim. And now I understand. I've never lived it, but as I do more of this teaching, and especially in talking to you where you're so open about this problem and how it affected you.
I've come through it so positively that if I could share any of that and help change that for someone, I have a real passion.
I'm absolutely using that in my classes. I'll sometimes be sitting with people and I say, I'll go along with the shelter. It's okay. It's not your fault. You were a victim. But now you know what the pattern is. Now you know. And you have to say, if you go back into that relationship, and what you said today really helped me a lot, where you said, if the person is not willing to get help, if the abuser is not willing to reach out to get help for themselves, the victim has to cut them loose.
And there's some other
things gotta be
psychologically to realize. Some people have something called a trauma bond. And I've seen children do this. They've been horribly abused by their parents, and they're bonded to them.
Yeah.
And it's called a trauma bond. And because people, they've also been abused, and they become like codependent, or there's a lot of different. And mine was threatening my life so that, like I was not going to leave. He drew a circle around me. He moved so many, and this went on for years, that he never lived more than 5 miles away from me several times, tried to buy the house next door to mine.
Right.
This is when they take on a stalker mentality.
Right.
And I could have had him arrested and put in jail for stalking. I had all the evidence, and I had a stalking specialist, and we could have done it. And I thought, you're going to put him in jail for 1 year.
Yeah.
And when
and then
he
he'll
gets
come out,
out
and be really mad.
You know what I'm going to have on my hands.
Yeah.
That's not going to help me.
Yeah.
And you guys don't understand that.
Right.
That is not going to help me. He's going to come out madder than a wet hen. And he's vengeful, spiteful, and you just really have
that to... That could be the tipping point where you'd lose your life.
Right, and I knew his triggers. I learned some of his triggers, you know, and so what you got to do is really study your situation, and you got to assess your own situation. Are you a codependent type of person?
Yeah.
Do you have a trauma bond? Or how strong are you? And if you need extra help, extra counseling, this is where it's true. Once you learn this, stop being a victim. You have to take the initiative. Do it. Take the advice. Hear the counsel. If some people need more help. Some people are not that strong. I am a very strong person. I know that because, I mean, I've had
You're
lots of girlfriends who, no matter what, I mean, they were just had to have a man in their life. They just haven't had that strength. They don't know how to get away from it. And for me, it was just making up my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I've seen people have a trauma bond or just not that strong, especially women that weren't able to financially make it on their own, and then if they've got kids and they're trying to support those children and they don't know how they're going to do it. I've seen men threaten these women and say, I'll kill the children.
Yeah.
I'll kill you. And they are petrified.
Right.
And they are locked into fear. And it really does take sometimes other people with wisdom to help them. I saw a girl in one of the worst cases here in Arizona that she was going through domestic violence at a level that I never saw, thank God. Her boyfriend, she had two daughters. The oldest daughter was not the child of her boyfriend, but the youngest daughter was. And she'd experienced domestic violence before, and lo and behold, her second boyfriend had some of the very same characteristics. It happens, but girls are not... You know, it's just like you're not aware of what you're doing until you're taught. That's why I say get educated.
Mm-hmm.
But
so you mean educated by going and learning about
domestic violence. Absolutely.
And
study
the cycles.
Domestic
of,
violence, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
and
if you've
in
been
the
a
spider
victim,
and the fly, it teaches you how to catch when you're dating. It teaches you what to look for.
Oh, excellent.
Ahead of time. So
excellent.
That you not only get out of the situation you're in.
Right.
That's a book. I don't know how old it is. I know I read
I'll
gosh,
look it up.
It was excellent.
In the
back of that book, I have always said if I could start a nonprofit agency, one of the things I would have done would be buy some of those materials that I found absolutely excellent. And I used to go to the library and check that book out, and I'd give it to other women. I'd tell them, I want you to read this. Read it, and then do it. Because in the back, it also gave pure and simple steps and signs. When you're ever dating again, what do you look for? These are abusive signals so that you do not ever get back into that pattern again, because people tend to stay in their own patterns, but you have
right.
to study it to recognize your own patterns.
Right.
And that right there, if you don't know what you're doing, I mean, like, don't try to drive to California if you've never driven, if you don't know the way.
Yeah.
Get the directions. Learn your way out of that. All you know is what you know now.
Right.
Until you get
and
more education.
And that wasn't enough, because that got you into
that's
where
exactly
you're
exactly right. Yes. So get the education.
Yeah.
Go when you're if at least they've made the step to go to a domestic violence shelter, yay. They made step one.
Yeah.
Yes, do be excited about that. You found the strength to do that. You want to get out of it, now stick with it. Stick with what you're taught. Take the advice of those that have gotten out of it and learn everything that you can, because I said, I couldn't understand. Nothing made sense. And my logical mind is not going
to
try to understand the
yeah.
mind of an abuser.
Right.
So you've got to figure it out.
And see, I talk to my class, and they're constantly changing. You know, I use the principles in my book, Success or Failure, The Choice is Yours. And I'm sitting talking to people about defining what success means to them in their life. And these are people that are just came out of an abusive situation. They have, some of them have, well, they're a cross-section of everybody. It's from, I have a sixth-grade education to I have a PhD. So
right.
there's it's not just at this person or that person. It's across the board. And then sometimes the shelters are full, and I'll have maybe 15 or 20 ladies and five or six men in there, and it's hard to...
And they're all, I bet if you ask them all, they're all completely dumbfounded as to how they got there. They're
yeah.
like, why did a person that I loved and trusted turn into this?
See, and what I try to do is get
them
to think about this idea of being a victim or being victimized. And when you're in the shelter, I say, you're now safe in the shelter. So you've survived being a victim. But if you don't make changes here, because they only have 45 days, it's not like they get to stay there forever. But one of the things that we've done is, since I've been going to the classes, I was told that the number of people getting jobs went from less than 10% to over 75%.
Tremendous.
So
that's tremendous.
It's just
that's
the
great.
Fact, and these are ladies that have children, some of them don't have enough education to do things, and so I try to get them to think, like last night I was talking to this one young lady, she's 27 years old, doesn't have a mom and dad, but had a lot of relatives, and was raised with the relatives, and her whole thing was that she did things for everybody in the family, and she said she worked 5 years at a job, which was minimum wage, and she was working 100-hour weeks so that she could make enough money to pay her sister's rent. And I just told her, I said, now, let's see, is this your child over here? And she had a little child.
Now, that's
child.
Not pay rent to her sisters for her own rent. She
no,
wanted
no,
to pay.
Just paying the rent of the sister who lived at a different place.
Right.
I need somebody to pay my rent. Oh, here's some money. And I said, what you did is you just stole that money from your child.
Exactly, yes.
You stole that money from your child. That is not money
that
for your sister.
That is her first responsibility.
It's you first. You cannot help your child if you don't help you. And in order to make you happy or make you be self-sufficient, then you can help your child. So as you're trying to put all of your attention on, oh, I want to help other people, I said, just get out a mirror and And I took her over to a mirror in her class, and I said, look here. There's a person that's causing you all your problems. It's not anything else. It's that person there. It's the decisions you make. Now, if you don't have the skills to make the right decisions, you now have the time to get those skills. Mm-hmm. And so we talked after the class. We went outside. We were standing there for probably a half an hour, and she said, nobody's ever talked to me like this. And I said, I don't have a mom and dad. And I said, you're not helping people. You're being abused by them. You're being taken advantage of by this family that you say, oh, I need to help them. Let them go help themselves.
They're being crippled also.
Yeah, you're just an enabler to these other people.
Tom, hello. We seem to have lost your transmission. I know we're still live on the air. However, the transmission is gone.
Are you there, Pete?
Hello, Tom. We're back. I don't know what happened. You're back on air now.
Okay, very good. I thought we were going along pretty good there. The interesting thing that we were talking about, and part of this really helps me understand this problem of domestic violence. I mean, I didn't write my book for the purpose of helping victims of domestic violence. But I'm finding that it's so simple that it doesn't matter what age level or education level people are, because a lot of the people that I have as students, they're above 55. You know, I mean, I'm surprised that they've taken so long to get out of the you know, to actually go seek help. And
but, you know, one of the things that people go through is that feeling of, I'm not worthy. And this is what I was going to say. When your parents kick you out and treat you like you're gum on the bottom of somebody's shoe, you actually think you are gum on the bottom of somebody's shoe. And then when you have an abusive husband, you think, well, this is all I deserve.
Yeah.
And when you spoke of that gal, you know, the whole family has that, well, I'm not worthy, and I just want to be loving and try to help someone. So that person has a good, loving heart and wants to help. And the greatest thing that could happen to them is to learn to first take care of themselves, be strong. They're your first duty is to your children. If you're a parent, that is your first duty is to your parent, is to your children. And you don't owe the rest of the world anything.
Yeah. But you can't help your children if you're not helping yourself.
That is exactly true.
I hate to say it this way, but the children are second, because if you stay in that domestic violence thing, because of my children, I don't want to have this happen to them. It's happening to them.
Because of your children, you should get out of it.
That's the point. But that's where they miss the actual connection. And when this is the real thing that I'm trying to teach them, is that they don't have to stay in this. And
another tough one, Tom, is the Christian gals and the gals who are taught that divorce is wrong.
Oh,
that you're supposed to forgive.
This lady last night was
huge.
Was exactly
huge.
That. She said, "Oh, I'm Catholic. I saved myself for marriage." And what I got on my wedding night was beat up. I mean,
so she did right, and she's still trying to make sense of all of this. Now, I can speak to that issue right there, because me being a Christian, I don't believe you can just. I think there's only three ways you can actually get out of a marriage, and one is death. One is if that person completely abandons you, or infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, if I thought that you could get out of a marriage because you got beat up, I would have gotten, you know, biblically, I would have gotten out of it. Believe me, I mean, but I couldn't find it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, I'm one that studies those scriptures. I study them, search them. It's not there.
You know,
but there is a great story about David and Abigail about, and it does teach us how to deal with it. Let me tell you, number one, is it's true, you don't have to get a divorce, but this law in America does allow us to be protected. So I did go and get an order of protection, which means they had to put him out of the house. Now, by law, I am protected to not be beat up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that order of protection protected me. They would put him out of the house, and then I could live in the home that my dad bought for me later on. In later years, my dad came back around into my life and really helped us. He was sad to find out what we'd been through, but he helped us. He bought a home for me, which was helpful, very, very helpful. But I, and me and those four kids would stay there. And, yes, I still did help my family. I showed gratitude and respect to my dad for helping me. I kept his house clean. I cooked dinner for him every single night. He lived across the street. And that was another thing I did. Don't be isolated. Stay as close to your family and friends. Do not allow yourself to be isolated where other people cannot see what's going on, because that abuser has more freedom when nobody sees what's going on. But being close to people, don't allow yourself to be moved out to the country. Don't allow yourself to where people cannot come over and your numbers keep getting changed. You take that as a huge red flag if that's going on. But by getting an order of protection, those are good for a year now. They used to be only good for 6 months.
Yeah.
Now, that gives me the freedom. If I went around him, I have not broken the law. But if he came around me, I could call the police and be protected. That kept him from coming around my house. I didn't get a divorce. But did I protect myself and my family and cause order to be in my family and use the law that we have here in America to protect myself and create peace? Yes.
Okay.
Could I do that? Yes. Now, while he was out of the house and couldn't come around me, men, as they often will do, decided to move in with this other girl, and then he got her pregnant, which, check mark, I'm free. You know, I was free.
Yeah.
So, well, yes.
From your interpretation of the Bible.
For those gals that really feel, that have those convictions,
right.
You know, you don't have to get a divorce. And I do, and you can still be good and do right. You know, and doesn't mean
so
you have to go.
Did that allow you to get a divorce, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And
because that met one of your Christian principles.
Yes, and you know, and a lot of women feel that they're. And if this gal waited until she was married, I mean, waited, you know, for, you know, she was trying to do everything right. She's still going to have those convictions. She's wanting to do everything right in her own conviction. But you got to learn there are ways, and it's not okay. The Bible also says treat other people the way you want to be treated, and it tells you, there's a lot that it teaches about how a man should treat a woman and all that kindness.
But it also tells you that God helps those that help themselves.
That's actually not a scripture, but it does say you can reach out and you can call on God for help, period. And God cares about that hurting one. I'm telling you for a fact, God cares. And there are ways.
Yeah.
And he did give us this law, and appreciate that law. He did give us this law that protects us, so use it. And you must make police reports. They will try to, now remember, they're cowards.
Yeah.
They will try to intimidate you. When you make a police report, one of the worst things I did was not consistently make police reports, because then you've got that evidence, and you can actually convict.
You've got a trail.
And they'll try to blame you. Oh, you called the police on me. It's all your fault. I'm like, no, I didn't punch myself.
Yeah.
My ex gave me one of the biggest black eyes ever, crushed my head. I thought he was going to crush my head like a melon. He was a bodybuilder. He was very strong. He just almost crushed my head like a melon one time. And I can't, the fear, I was like, he's going to kill me. Again, I mean, that feeling of he's going to take me out right now and my kids are watching. But I ended up, I mean, he kind of let go. I think he actually felt it, but I got the biggest black eye just from him squeezing me like that. I happened to work for eye doctors at the time. And I just realized that was so difficult, but I didn't report that to the police. I needed to physically go make the report.
And police report.
I was doing all I could do just to be able to get out of the house to go to work.
Yeah.
Because he'd slam me into the walls, and just, I mean, he made my life a living nightmare at all times. If I ever tried to do anything to help myself be free, and I rode the bus to work for a year, trying to get to work because he disabled my car while he drove the truck my dad bought for me so that I wouldn't be pinned down. He disabled my car on purpose, and watched me ride the bus for a year.
Right.
I didn't care. I was going to find a way to go. I was going to have that little extra money to buy my kids those things that they needed, those little things, you know. and just to be able to save, begin to save. And because my dad was across the street, I couldn't really tell him everything because he also threatened my dad. I mean, you have to understand the circle that they draw around. It is not that easy to get away.
Yeah.
If it were that easy, they would.
Yeah.
They draw a circle. They threaten your family and friends. They threaten you. They threaten to hurt your children. Then they begin to hurt your children. They threaten you, and they really debilitate you.
But like
it's
you said,
powerful.
That, but
you
like you said, that they're actually cowards. So when you finally do stand up
yes.
to them, that's when they back off.
And that became the magical moment was, you know, you're standing there on that threshold, and they're intimidating you, and they're saying, if you call the police, I'll do this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Well, if he's going to do it, you know,
he's gonna do
whatever.
It. Yeah.
You're
going
to pound me anyway.
Right.
Whatever. You know, I'm already used to this. And I'm mean as a bobcat now myself. So go ahead. You know, I was just like, forget it. You know, I was like, I'm going to do it anyway. So I was, so I make those police reports. But I would call the police, and sometimes they would just say, well, there's nothing we could do or whatever. But you have to make the police reports. You can even make a police report up to, now this may be old knowledge, I don't know if it's changed, but you can make a report even up to 7 years later.
Oh.
You can go in, because you know these children that have been molested, now they're coming
yeah.
back as they're adults now, and
mm-hmm.
they're making these police reports against people. Stick up for yourself. Make those police reports now.
Yeah.
You have something
so
on him.
That's
now
something
you have a
that
police record.
I'll really have to bring
you
up
must,
in my class.
You must. Because now you've got a whole bunch of boys in blue that have it recorded for
yeah.
anybody to pull up on him
right.
that he wants beat a woman,
yeah.
that he wants hit, threatened, intimidated, whatever. Now he's got to answer to a judge. Oh, they're so shaky. Oh, how they change then.
Yeah.
Oh, how their tune changes then. Now there's something on them. Now you actually have a ball in your court.
Yeah.
And they can actually go to jail. Now mine did go to jail and would call, and I actually heard this grown, big, tough man cry, oh, it's awful in here. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh.
When you're out here, it's
right?
awful for me, too.
I was like, you know, I'd like to feel sorry for you, but not, you know. And am I going to take my hard-earned money and get you out of there? Absolutely not. That's a good place for you.
Yeah.
How's it feel?
Yeah, that's where you deserve to be.
You know, and it's not being hateful. It's being
no.
strong. And this is where you gotta. You take the knowledge of you are not, and they'll try to tell you, you are hurting me. You are baloney.
Yeah.
You did that to yourself. That's the law. The law says you cannot do that. You chose to do it, and that's that.
Those were your
own
decisions.
It. Right.
Those were your decisions,
and
you got to live with
back
them.
Down. And you're
yeah.
exactly right when you're telling them, stop being a victim. You must stick up for yourself. Don't wait for somebody else to do it. Stand up for yourself, and make those police reports, because mm-hmm. it will help you. It will begin to help you. Eventually, through time, I did have enough evidence finally that I could prove that he was trying to get me killed. And I do have a court order protected address, although now he knows where I live. And I'm like, well, I don't care, because I've done so much now that you do anything and I can get you put in prison.
Yeah.
Do not mess with me. Not to mention I'm a good shot. And I'm not afraid of you anymore.
Yeah.
You cannot scare me. I am not afraid of you anymore. I understand all of that fear, the breaking
but,
into the sweat, the trembling, feeling sick to your stomach, feeling like you're going to faint and pass out, absolutely being afraid, having nightmares, tremors, fear, your pride taken away, you don't even know who you are, what color you like, you don't know anything. I've been ripped right to the core.
Yeah.
But you can come out of that. You must for your children. Do it. Be strong. And it's so wonderful because now I just feel, I'm back to my cupcake self where I'm sweet. I just feel sweet again. I don't feel so defensive. There was times when people could not walk up behind me and touch me from behind. I would jump. I'd been known for elbowing folks in the
yeah.
in the stomach. You know, I would just jump. I
yeah.
mean, I had this
You're defending
fear.
Yourself.
I was really terrified. If somebody ran up and said boo, I would scream. I mean, it was really pathetic,
yeah.
you know, but I had been afraid. He snuck in my house one time. He was in my house when I came home from church with my four kids. I put three of them to bed, and one of them I was feeding him. He was little, and I was feeding him something and singing to him in my little corny way, you know, la 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 la, you know. And I'm thinking I'm alone in the house with my children. And little did I know, he'd been in there watching me for an hour, and I didn't know it. And I passed a hallway, and he jumped out at me. Now, mind you, he's much bigger than me. He's a bodybuilder. He jumped out at me out of the darkness. I'd been in my house for an hour with my children. I had an order of protection. He was out of the house. he said his gas was off and he needed to take a shower, and so could he come over while I was gone to church to take a shower? And my answer was no. And I finally buckled, and he's like, well, I'm not giving you any child support money then. And I'm like, whatever. You don't really, you only help me. He would help me as long as he got what he wanted. He would say, well, and he would always try to make it conditional. And I said, look, you're either going to pay for your kids or you're not. You know, that's on you. Whatever.
Yeah.
And I decided I was going to suffer if I had to. If we had to eat beans and live in a cardboard box, that's what I was going to do, but we are not going to be abused anymore. And, but that time I buckled. I allowed my no to become an okay, and I said, just be gone before we get home, because I don't want to see you, don't want to deal with you. So I thought I was being considerate, the considerate, nice, kind person that I am. I allowed it, and you cannot.
You can't do that.
Absolutely cannot.
You let your guard down.
That's exactly right. And I said, okay, but when I came in the house, I saw his watch somewhere, and I saw his shoes under my bed. And I looked and I thought, well, maybe he had a different pair of shoes and maybe he just left them there, but why'd he put them there? That kind of gave me the creeps, kind of worried me. But I just was like, well, I don't see him. Yeah, I don't see him anywhere in the house. Door was locked when I got home. I really thought I was okay. But then it's dark. I'm in the house. And he leaped out and just yelled, rah, at me and stood, just towered over me. And I'm holding my little one that I almost dropped to the floor, because I have actually never felt terror like that. It actually hurt right to my bones. I almost dropped my little guy, my little baby. And I screamed, and then I said his name. And he goes, oh, I see who you scream for when you're scared. I go, you idiot, I recognized you. I said, you're the last person I would call for help. You've never helped me. You've never, when my car dies on the side of the road, I would trust a stranger to help me. But I can't call you. You won't help me.
Yeah.
You don't help me. And I was just furious, but he just laughed. And they've got something going on in their own mind. Don't think you're going to figure them out.
Yeah, don't even try.
You don't, right. Don't, because you do not think like they do.
Yeah, and good.
Right.
Good, you don't.
Right, yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah.
And I decided I am a normal, logical, caring person, and this person is not.
And they're not.
And yes, they may need help, but I can't do it.
Yeah.
I have to focus on taking care of my kids and myself.
They need to get help themselves, and that's one of the things that I really... thank you for in this session that we've had here is the fact that I'm learning a lot so that I can pass that on to the people that come through my class.
I applaud you for that. It's especially marvelous coming from a man.
Well, you have to give back where you can give back. And like I say, I didn't start out to be an expert on domestic violence, and I'm not. But I'm an expert at living. I just finished walking the Grand Canyon and spent 2 days in the hospital because of it. But I wound
up...
I went rim to rim, and my son came.
And how old were you again, Tom, if you don't remember?
74.
74, and just typed the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
That's my inspiration there, right there.
Yeah.
It's like on my list of things to do, right? I'm going to do that someday.
So you try to do the things that you have to do, but being able to walk out of that and... knowing that you're capable of doing anything you set your mind to. The point is you have to set your mind to it. You have to, if you're in a domestic violence situation, it is not going to get better if you just let it happen. It's like what you're talking about with these cycles. I'll be able to use those where the people can actually see their own life. Because I've only said... I'd say things like, well, you didn't get abused on your first date, right? No, it's like a predator. No, because they're too they're predators. It's like a lion looking at a herd of zebras. And he doesn't go and sit in the weeds and say, let's see, which is the strongest one in here? But see, sometimes they like the stronger one, the predators, the victim, the domestic violence perpetrators.
I wasn't strong when he found me.
Yeah.
I was on my own.
Right.
I was.
You were vulnerable.
And I felt like I was nobody.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe somebody wanted me. I really couldn't. When your parents throw you away, you can't believe somebody actually wanted you. You know, and so there is a little bit of that. You do feel like you're nobody.
You're being grateful because somebody's given you any attention.
Right.
And
it's how deceptive.
The point I try to make in working with the book is that you have to figure out that you have to do, if it is to be,
It is up to me. I have to take care of me first. Then I can take care of my children. And once I've done that, then I can look at helping other people. And until I've helped them, because to a person, I mean, this is the universal thing that the victims always tell me. I said, what do you want to do? Oh, I just want to help people.
Yes.
And that's what gets them into it. I figured that out. The reason that you're a victim is because you're vulnerable. You want to help people. So the predator sees that, and they pounce on you.
Mm-hmm.
And so now how do we get them out of that?
It's the same thing about the way women walk around when they say you're going through a parking lot. Don't look like
a victim.
Right. And you know what? And I mean, I square my shoulders, and I walk through the parking lot like I'm a Rambo chick. And
yeah.
if people laugh, I go, but I bet you they don't try to – you don't see people trying to jump on me.
No.
I go, I mean, I look around like I'll take you out. I mean, and they laugh. I mean, I'm like knee-high to a grasshopper, but I'm like, it's just the way I carry myself.
Mm-hmm.
I am not afraid anymore. I am absolutely not a
but
victim.
But see, you've come through this whole thing.
Absolutely. And they can.
That's the
step
lesson
one
that I want to –
you're telling us.
Yeah, this is the – the things that I want to get out to our audience and to anybody out there that does know a person that is being abused, do not let it continue. You have to get with that person. Have them make police reports. Have them build a file of evidence. Get them on a path. Get them into the library. Look at this book, Spider and the Fly. Just look it up on Google, and I'm sure that it'll come
Another
up.
Another good resource, if they want to Google, is the Arizona Coalition Against Domestic Violence.
Okay.
And tremendous. And they will actually send people materials. When I learned about them, they sent me free materials. I began to see really the situation that I was in, and it helped me prepare for my future to be free. I really had to understand what he was thinking. That's what helped me. I really could not understand that they will still come back as much as 7 years later and still try to kill that person.
Yeah, oh yeah, they never give up.
Right, and
yeah,
I mean, thought, well, that's okay. I mean, you know, but I had to learn, you must learn that. And so when you said at the beginning of the program how to realize, too, how to stay out of it, is you must pick up that learning that. And once I learned the situation, I figured it out, I'm ahead of it. Now I can actually forecast what he might do next.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually chuckled because I had him pegged. And he started to do some things. And I just started to laugh. I said, I still got him pegged.
Yeah.
And he'll still try to engage me. Now, mind you, we've got four kids together, got grandkids together. And I've adopted one of those grandkids. And we had to go through court battles, all kinds, still tried to get me involved in court and stuff. But I learned how to handle it, how to cope with it. I stayed the master of the program. I've earned my children's respect. I've learned, you know, and I've changed that whole picture. Yes, he's still around, but he's in check, and I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm free. And I don't have to be mean to anybody. I wasn't mean to anybody. I just told the truth.
Right.
It's not being mean. It's just purely telling the truth.
Yeah, and it's knowing that you deserve to get out of that situation.
And it feels so good. And the biggest thing was I've helped my kids. I believe it with them. And my kids will still come and talk to me and say, Dad said this, Mom, you know. And I tell them, ixnay.
Yeah.
I missed my second son's graduation. He graduated from college, and he wanted me. He said he wouldn't invite us to NAU to see him graduate. Now, mind you, my son did 2 years in Iraq. He joined the Army. He was so self-sufficient. I'm so proud of him. And thank you, God, he came home all in one piece. And you know, Lord bless the ones that didn't and their families, I think of them. You know, and but then he earns his GI Bill. He goes to college and earned a double major. He did fantastic, and I was so excited and wanted to see him. And he did it all on his own. I didn't help him. But he's got good backbone like I do.
Yeah.
He had good strength, and he was determined to not stay there and do things for himself. So I believe that's a pattern he learned from me. You know, if you're not happy where you're at, get up and do something about it.
Change it.
And he did. And I'm so proud of him. But he said to me, and so, yes, things will continue. On the But he wanted me to sit next to his dad at a graduation. I said, can't do it.
No.
So they got to accept, you know, no, I can't do that. Sorry.
Yeah. We're going to do some things, but we're not doing that. Yeah. Anyway, I would like to thank Terry for filling in and helping out today. I think this was an excellent show. And I personally learned a lot, and this will help me when I'm in my classes. So I really appreciate it. This is
I'm not exactly sure how to sign off because Dr. Terry Munther normally does this, and he's so excellent at it that I just sit there like a lump. And I would like to thank all the people that have tuned in to us today, and hope that you, if you know somebody that's going through this, know there is help. But the main thing is, if it is to be, it's up to me. And you can't help people until they decide they want help. Very much.
You've been listening to Success or Failure with Tom Legering and Terry Munther. Success or Failure is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.
It just blasted all of that. But I don't say names.